You are now listening to the Project Kuwait.
To the Project Kuwait.
To the Project Kuwait.
Where we stop at nothing to bring you the right facts on health, fitness, and psychology. Featuring some of the world's most experienced professionals. So you can learn, live, and live. With your hosts, Meg, Dr. D, and Mehdi.
A township is a unit of local government. So a unit of local government, you have your federal level, then you have your state level. Just below your state level, you have your county level. And then you have the township level. And just below the township is the municipal level. So the cities and towns. When relationships have not, one, been built on the right stuff, when there hasn't been enough investment in that relational aspect of the dyad, when you haven't prioritized each other as a couple, and then you're forced to be in the same space, like within the same four walls with this person, and there's really no break from that. It's really been make or break. We're seeing upticks like around the world in the number of divorces that have been filed. It has been my pleasure. You guys have been a delight. Have me back anytime. But again, I would prefer to get past this virus thing, and then we can come and do something locally.
Yes, definitely.
All this and more in today's episode.
I already started recording, so there are rules. It's no religion, no politics. But at this point, with carnivore virus, Corona. Keep saying carnivore for some reason. With coronavirus, anything goes. So, Dr. D, you want to do the introductions?
Well, I let Dr. Jerry Weems introduce himself. Jerry and I, we met at the university when we were doing our PsyD. So we've been friends for a long time. And since then, I think I met you in one of my psychometric class. And since then, we've been friends. And he's a psychologist and he's practicing in Chicago. So I wanted him to introduce himself and say all about his experience. He has a wealth of experience. Plus, I love what you do with the township. So I think that's also important to be mentioning
it. Thanks for having me, guys. It is a delight to be on. I think Dr. Dinka and I have discussed this prospect for, several years now, and it's good to finally be on. I'd hoped that I was going to be hosted there in Kuwait, but that hasn't happened yet. Maybe after we get over this coronavirus, then we can make that happen, right, Dr. Dinka?
Definitely. No, definitely. I fear the right opportunity. Every time I think of a right opportunity, then something happens. And now with
something happens, COVID-19, that's for sure. Yeah, yes. The universe is conspiring against us, I think.
but we have to have you in Kuwait one of these days, seriously.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
You've been to Dubai several times, actually.
Dubai's a lot nicer than Kuwait. I mean, you can't blame the guy. Who wouldn't want to go to Dubai?
Clearly one of my favorite regions in the world. So I'm looking forward to making it out there. But as Dr. Dinka mentioned, we've known each other for we go back over 20 years, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We graduated on the same day, right?
Yeah, we did.
2000. That's over 20 years. And then I started the program in 96. Yeah. And so I'm sure we had some classes together, and I got to see Dr. Dinka before she was the famous Dinka. So I'm glad to say that I knew her when. That's for sure. And so we've had interesting journey, if you will. After I graduated from the Illinois School of Professional Psychology, we then decided to do a master's program at Roosevelt University for business, because I was more interested in not just hanging up my shingles and having patients come in and see me, but I was interested in the business side of things and then having an impact at more of a macro level versus just a micro level. And so I present very differently from the typical person with a doctorate in clinical psychology, because that business aspect was very important to me. And I find that people in the healthcare industries or in the helping professions, we're typically very much about having impact, like being able to help our clients and treat and things of that nature. But we don't also have the same kind of passion towards the business side of things. Sometimes think that the two are mutually exclusive, and they are not, for sure. And clearly, to be able to manage and operate in today's society, you have to not only be concerned with impact, but also of the financial ramifications. So those were things that were very important to me. I found myself after I didn't finish the MBA program. I got what I needed to get out of it. And then I got out of there because those student loans are still piling up. But having said that, you mentioned the township. I've been here at Thornton Township for 17 years now. And let me back up a little bit because your viewers may not be knowledgeable of what townships are. I'm not sure if you guys have townships in Kuwait. Do you?
No, we don't.
Okay. So to that end, a township is a unit of local government. So think about it from the perspective of and Dr. Dinka, and I may periodically call her Jay because that's just, we do. She that's calls me fine. Jay, I call her Jay. But so a unit of local government, you have your federal level, then you have your state level. Just below your state level, you have your county level, and then you have the township level. And just below the township is a municipal level. So the cities and towns. I actually work at, and I'm the director of youth and family services for the largest township in the state of Illinois. In my role, my department, we're responsible for ensuring that services are available, social services, behavioral health, mental health services, and other, including educational services, are available for all the youth and families that make up Thornton Township. And again, I said that it's the largest township in Illinois, and it's largest because there's 17 different cities that are a part of our township and that we're responsible for. And those cities have lots of population, very populous. So there's over, I want to say 230,000 residents that make up Thornton Township. In this role, as I mentioned, I'm the executive director here. We've been in this position since 2003, and we do a lot from counseling and therapy services that are pretty typical and pretty traditional. But with the age of Corona, we're starting to do things outside of the traditional way of doing things. Like we've seen for the last 10 plus years that telehealth and telemedicine was going to have an impact, and that's kind of how healthcare has been trending. And so I've been trying to get the residents of our township and other and the clients that utilize our services on board with that. That has been a slow process up until just now. So we're finding some silver linings and some blessings even amidst this pandemic. And so many of my therapists are currently seeing their caseload remotely. There, no one is actually here in my building with me right now, though we stay open because we are a unit of local government, but we're more or less funneling people into having services provided, at least by my department, virtually. And that's working out very well, but we're continuing to get the word out so more people are aware of the fact that you can, in fact, get services. And I want to further back out. So everyone that receives services here at the township receive them completely free of charge. We're able to operate because as a unit of local government, we receive our revenues through the taxpayer dollars by them paying their real estate taxes. And so we're able to offer therapy sessions. And again, Dr. Dinka, you're very familiar with the cost of each individual therapy session. In the States, you can pay anywhere between $90 and upwards of $150, $180, even $210 per session. Well, those sessions are completely free of charge to residents of Thornton Township. We know that there is a great need, and we know that we have a service offering that can help fulfill that need. But that being the case, people still haven't been as, I won't say interested, but as forthcoming in terms of participating in those programs and services. And so part of my job is to get the word out. We're battling things around stigma that's associated with mental health and behavior health. And I'm sure you're very much aware of that, the stigma that's involved. And then there's some other economic issues that people are typically concerned about. Well, we can address each of those issues around stigma and access by providing services to and through virtual methods and platforms. That most certainly has helped us. But we have to educate people. We have to get people comfortable with the technology side of things. And so that has been part of our challenge. But we've been looking forward to meeting that challenge as we do with all So the counseling therapy side is just one of the things that we're doing. We also provide after-school programming, summer enrichment programming. We do community involvement and community outreach. We do a lot of consulting here with other social service agencies to ensure that they are able to meet their organizational capacities. And again, that's a snippet of what we do. And most certainly, I'm sure I've left out a lot. I tend to do that, but I'm sure we'll circle back around when I answer some of your questions.
So with the pandemic, Dr. J, have you found anything that is, stigma was there anyways, and
yes,
it's really big here also. And I think that recently in the past 5-6 years, we've had a lot of even Kuwaiti young doctors who have, especially with psychiatry, have gone to the U.S., studied, come back, and now they are using the social media platform to really bring awareness. So I've been here since 2005, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for the past 5-6 years, people are putting a lot more effort into trying to normalize mental health issues and having people understand it in that parameter that is not any different than the medical or disease model in that sense. So I guess it's interesting because most of the time we think that in this part of the world, people have more stigma. They're not open to psychotherapy or psychiatry. They still think, you know, you're crazy. They keep it very quiet and very private and confidential. So it's good to hear that even in your area and in the township that you're working with a lot of people that are Americans, have been raised in the U.S., and still have the same mentality, and we're in the 21st century.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And again, there are a lot of cultural factors, obviously, and I'm sure you're aware of it, that go into that stigma beyond just not wanting to be thought of as a crazy person. People also have other like go-to resources. For instance, and particularly in communities of color, our faith-based leaders, our pastors, our priests, have really served the role as pastors, priests, counselors, attorney. And I think people have developed a certain connection, obviously, with their faith-based leaders, and that they just feel more comfortable going and talking things through with their faith-based leaders. The problem with that is many of them take on the role of counselor therapists, but aren't trained. And so they may be actually inadvertently doing more harm than they are good. And so we work closely with a lot of faith-based leaders in our area and even outside of the township in educating them on, listen, let's us all stay in our lane. And that's an important message. And that the fact that we can, in fact, work together in the best interest of this person that might be right in front of us. So that has been our message, and we'll continue to stomp for that.
Do you think the message is getting across to these, you know, to the groups that have a tough time buying into it and buying into the mental health aspect? I mean, especially the youth. I mean, that's got to be a tough one right there because, you know, as a young kid growing up, for me, I grew up with a lot of anger issues. Dr. D knows a lot about me and my anger issues when I was younger. And I had the old school mentality of what my coaches used to tell me. You know, I played sports my whole life. And it was like, all right, go take it out on the field. Me and Dr. D still disagree with, you know, the displacement of my anger issues because I take it out on the field and she thinks I need to talk to somebody. Whereas my generation, talking was for softies. And so do you still have trouble breaking through to the youth in that perspective?
Well, I think that you're touching on a lot of interesting issues and I should have been taking notes. That coach piece is very important. It would suggest that there was someone that was in a authority-like position in your life that you respected and that you were listened to. And that coach essentially was serving a purpose for you that was therapeutic. Now, it may not have been getting at, say, your core issues, but it did at least allow you an outlet. And that's something that is very important. Like, we all need outlets if we're also going through some therapeutic exchanges with someone that can actually lead that process for you. And so that actually leads very nicely into the other piece of your question in terms of how are youth responding to it. I think it all revolves around how it's packaged. Like if it's packaged as this is a clinical thing, this is therapy, and only crazy people get therapy, then we would have more pushback. But I will tell you this, when people are suffering, when they're in pain, they want the pain to stop. And so sometimes you can, depending on where that person might be in their journey or in their process, they're willing to take the help from any helping person. And it's just what we recommend is that they're willing to take that from someone that is professionally trained, that is caring, that's considerate, that's competent. You know, we can all talk about, I remember when Dr. Dinka and I were in school, there's several people that were going through the program and that were graduating, that were going to become doctors and clinical psychologists and the like. And we're like, how the heck did this person? Because they had the common sense and were about as smart as a box of rocks. And so and you have that in all industries throughout health professions. So I'm not saying anything that I think is earth-shattering, but the reality is that not everyone that has a degree on their wall or a license is competent. And so I think it's important to be able to develop a presence where people respect you, that you have a healthy dose of respect when you're meeting with that person that's across the desk or across the chair from you. And especially with kids, like that trust factor, that ability to build a rapport, that ability to meet them where they are, irrespective of what you're calling it, whether you call it coaching, whether you call it counseling or therapy, just being able to make that empathic connection with is a good starting block for being able to see some greater outcomes on the other side of this.
I guess Hillary said it, not that I'm impressed by that, but the one thing it's factual is that it does take a village. I mean, it's not everyone that is going through a crisis just needs a therapist. And I feel like those people that are in our life, especially for youth, I think, I mean, even with Mehdi remembering my coach and growing up, so that's a memory for him that there was somebody there. Even though they told him, toughen it up, that's for soft. It's still, there was some sort of a support and a role model that really plays a big part of our life. Like to this day, I remember when I immigrated to the US, I can't remember the teacher's name, but I remember there was one teacher, she was teaching me English. Mm-hmm. And not that she gave me rock science kind of an advice, but I remember her just being there or accepting my accent or realizing that I was different or I came from another country. It's to this day, I mean, she wasn't the therapist. She didn't really listen to my problems. But having the idea of someone just accepting you, someone that just talked about anything, taught me certain words and vocabulary in English. I don't know. To this day, I remember her. So obviously, she made an impact.
She did have an impact. And I'm glad that you brought up, and I was writing down as you were just speaking there, you said it takes a village. And so you're referring to like adage that it takes a village to raise a child. And in that example that you just gave, Doc, the village was helpful, right? The village was able to provide you with something that was necessary for that period of time in your life. But I have a question for you. What if the village is sick? What if the village is not healthy? And so what you then get from the person that's identified as the patient, as you get their stuff combined with the sickness or the illness that the village might present with. The village is not able to help them, or at least not in a healthy way, help them. Then what are you left with? I mean, you're left with a lot of illness. You're left with a lot of sickness. You're left with a pandemic even. And so I think it's important that we not only, and clearly you and I were taught the same thing, that even though the person that presents in this chair next to you, they're the identified patient, right? But we know that it's the system from which they come from that most certainly is having an impact on how they present. And so it's important that we're able to have some touch points with the system, have some touch points with the family to ensure that they're involved, to ensure that they're bought in into this healing, healthy process.
It's nice that you said the system is sick, because right now with the pandemic, and the whole family's living in the same house.
Yeah.
They all are suffering from the same issues. So I would like to hear your perspective, since you do work with youth. Actually, we don't really talk a lot about youth here, just because I don't practice it as much like you. I would love to hear, A, what kind of symptoms maybe you're seeing right now with the pandemic with youth, but then talking about the village is sick, which is actually happening right now. Everyone, mm-hmm. not sick with COVID, but sick with mental stress.
Yeah.
How are they dealing with each other? I'd like to hear what you've been seeing there.
Yeah. And just to be clear, I don't want there to be any misunderstandings. And Jay, you know, I haven't done any clinical work myself for at least 10 years. I have clinicians in place that do, in fact, provide the services. I do still do a lot of supervision with selected interns and alike. So what I'm getting from mm-hmm. my team is that people are accustomed to their comfort zones, right? And I've heard a lot of folk talk about when can we return to normal? And I've heard of this new normal and all this stuff. Well, what's causing people a lot of stress and anxiety is that this is unknown. Like, we've never been here before. This is unprecedented for our generation, right? So people have been very stressed out, not being able to account for what come, not knowing what's to come. Their schedules have been rocked and they're not the same. People are trying to figure out, and these are adults, and I'll tell you how it trickles down to children, are concerned about how they're going to pay their bills. Some are concerned about whether or not they're going to have a job. They're concerned about whether or not they actually have contracted the virus and are asymptomatic. They're concerned about whether or not auntie or cousin or grandma is going to live because they may be in a congregate care setting and that the virus is like ravaging through that setting. Like, these are some significant concerns. It's causing people a lot of stress, and it's outside of not only their comfort zone, but outside of what they can control. I believe as human beings, we try to the best of our abilities, control our environment, and we can develop and build a certain amount of confidence by knowing that, okay, I know that this blue vase is going to be there every time that I look over that. Now, if for some reason the blue vase, and you guys can't see my blue vase, but if that blue vase somehow when I looked over there wasn't there, that might cause me some anxiety because I'm like, wait a minute, what happened to the blue vase? That blue vase is my go-to. That blue vase is what I know is going to always be there. And I have a sense of comfort, security, safety when I know that it's there, right? To that end, I think they're not accustomed to seeing their parents not comfortable. Like, this is causing some issues for them. This time is truly traumatic. And there's been a ton of research on adverse childhood experiences, a ton of research done on those kind of phenomena and what you can expect to see. You see a lot of depression. You see a lot of isolation. Not that we're not already isolated by being quarantined, but you even see more isolating. You see a lot of anxiety, and that clinical picture looks different depending on the individual and what that individual might also otherwise be dealing with. You may see children that come from families in which domestic violence or child abuse has been taking place and has been a part of their experience, but their breaks would be when they would go to school. Or their breaks would be when the parent that was the abuser would be at work. Well, now nobody's in school, nobody's at work. So we're seeing an uptick in the numbers of abuse that I'm sure going into domestic violence courts. We're seeing an uptick in the number of people that are calling the DCFS hotline and things of that nature. And so we're dealing with a lot of like this forced confinement. That is our quarantine, that we're believing that it's in our best interest to protect us from the virus. It's not protecting us, and actually it may be putting us more in contact with individuals that we might have some other traumas around. Did that make any sense? Like, you guys following?
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. I just wrote that down. How is domestic abuse right now in your area? I mean, we've seen it a lot on the news, and I can only imagine how bad it is for men, not only women. No offense, Dr. D, but, you know, men are also subject to domestic abuse. We have to say that men definitely are subject to domestic abuse. But
I will let that slide for now.
I'm sure every woman right now that listens to this show wants to hit me, but including my wife when she hears this. But, but how is it right now in your area?
Well, I'm not sure of the actual statistics, but what I can tell you is that when relationships have not, one, been built on the right stuff, when there hasn't been enough investment in that relational aspect of the dyad, when you haven't prioritized each other as a couple, and then you're forced to be in the same space, like within the same four walls with this person, and there's really no break from that, it's really been make or break. We're seeing upticks like around the world in the number of divorces that have been filed. And I'm sure in the States, we're going to start to see the same, if not already. I can't speak to the domestic violence issues per se, because I don't know what those are. I'm just thinking, just based on all the dynamics, that I would expect that there's more incidents of police being called out to break up domestic disputes and the like, just because you have some of the same individuals that are in a close proximity to each other, and they have to relate to each other in one way or another. And if you've developed these kind of unhealthy patterns of relating to each other, the more time that you spend in that situation, you would think logically that that would increase the number of incidents.
Actually, I was thinking about the comment you said earlier. It's true. Although for us, we're quarantined, of course, and we have curfew. Yeah. So we have to be home by 4 p.m. until 8 in the morning. And right now, it's not. Yes, exactly. So we're in quarantine for 12 hours, and then we're out for like, 8 hours, and then back again. If we go, a lot of people don't go anywhere. And for me, I do everything virtual. So I just go to the groceries and come back. But it was interesting comment that you said is that we're quarantined, and we are, because that's what we're supposed to do to protect ourselves from coronavirus. But actually, we're creating other problems. Even here, that once we are allowed to go to normal, whatever that normal is, I think we're going to have a lot more problems, including more domestic violence, more divorces. So although this is supposed to, if it's supposed to protect it, if that is the case, then right now we've put kids in a house where there was violence. Even for us, at 4 o'clock, everyone has to be home, which most of the time they are home anyway. And they're going to be more at risk of being beaten, abused.
Yes. You know,
if there's any form of abuse that before this little kid was able to get out of it for school, for example, they're not. If the wife is, there was domestic violence in the house, now she can't run away anywhere. He can't go to work. He's not going to work anyways. So the idea is that she's more putting herself more at risk for all this violence, including the children and including men. I'm not excluding men per se. It strikes me that it's true. We're doing one thing to protect, but we're really adding another dynamic that these kids are going to be traumatized. And a lot of people thinking we're going to be traumatized because of coronavirus or my, you know, I'm telling my kids, well, at least you'll remember one thing in your life, that at least we had this pandemic while we're alive.
Yeah.
But I was thinking that's the only thing they have to worry about. Other kids are like going to remember, no, during coronavirus, this is what happened to me.
Yeah.
I was traumatized. I was abused. I was this. I couldn't have enough food to eat. It's very nice.
I'm glad that you brought that up. And something that you said that I found interesting, and I'd like to maybe chew on a little bit more. You said that this forced quarantine would create other problems. My perspective is that it's not creating other problems, but it's more or less revealing other situations that might have been undercurrents before, but now it really comes to the fore because it's exacerbated by other stressors. And so I don't necessarily think that these things are being created as a result of Corona and the quarantine, but most certainly that now you can't run from it. See, a lot of people in relationships, they tend to do the old dig a hole, stick your head in it and keep it there and pretend that not all this stuff is going on around you. And you can do that and get away with that for so long. You can do that longer if you don't have to be in relationship or interact with that person all day, every day. But when you change those things, like when you gotta put people in this box, if you will, that's their homes, and it's over extended period of time, then that stuff really comes to the fore.
No, and I think that's an interesting thing. It's true. We're not creating, but we might be creating more. So for example, if the kid was being abused once a week on weekend when he's home and he's being naughty, now he's probably being naughty more, because not everyone, as people think, everyone in Kuwait is not living in nice villas and big houses. And like the myth people have about us, that everyone is rich and everyone has a big space. And I know, because whenever I talk to my friends in Chicago, they're like, well, at least you guys have spaces. You don't have to be in each other's space. And that's not true. There are a lot of expats here. There's also a lot of Kuwaitis that can't afford that. So we are in each other's space and we can't give time out for ourselves. And so actually it does. If these problems existed, now they're exacerbated to a lot more and more frequent. If a woman was being beaten once a week, now she's going to be beaten 10 times a week. And do you know what? She's not going to call the police here, because we do have protection here. They can call. But do you know why she won't? Because the country is busy with other things right now. That's the mentality. Not that they wouldn't help her, but it's more the idea of like, okay, right now, everyone that you talk to, they say, well, let's deal with COVID-19 now. Let's deal with the quarantine now. No one's really listening to you, because they're like, we have other things that we have to think about now. This is not your time to complain about your husband or... So
it's an outstanding point, and I hadn't considered how finite resources are, irrespective of what country you're in, right? There are finite resources on the healthcare side. There are finite resources in terms of municipal services and the like. So you're just referring to maybe law enforcement, for instance. There might be other priorities now as a result of what needs to happen in terms of enforcing stay-at-home orders and things of that nature. And that might take precedence or be prioritized over, again, a situation where it might be a domestic dispute or what have you. So it's a point well taken.
Just to shift gears, I'm just curious. You brought up something earlier about people being in close proximity to each other and it could breed more violence. What's the crime rate like you guys are in relation to the lockdowns and the coronavirus and everything? Some cities, crime has plummeted because the criminals obviously aren't out. And then in some cities, it's it's actually taken off and going through the roof. So what's it like for you guys? And are you seeing more youth getting involved in crime because of the lack of resources in terms of money and finding, you know, getting a job, basically?
Yeah, I appreciate the question. I would venture to say that we've seen a significant dip in crime here just because of what our state orders looks like. The only caveat to that is that our weather has not been the best. You know, even it is springtime here, but it doesn't seem much like springtime. Today is actually a decent day, temperature-wise, but for the most part, we've had less than a handful of really nice days. But when we have had nice days, then we do see an uptick in violence. We see an uptick in criminal activities and shootings and murders and things of that nature. So I hope I answered your question.
Yeah.
There. So
for both of you are psychologists, this is a question. Do you think we're going to see a big jump in crimes again, like in the 1980s during the recession back then, when crime was at its height in New York City and around the American states? Are we going to see another jump again in crime because of the coronavirus and people losing their jobs and the dip in economy? Do you foresee that, or do you foresee governments or people taking charge and allocating free food like we've seen a lot of food banks doing? Or, I mean, what do you guys think from that perspective? I mean, personally, I'm lucky. I mean, I thank God every day for my situation. But if I had to feed my kid and he was starving and there wasn't food on the table, I don't know what I would do. I'm assuming I probably would do whatever it was I could do to provide food for my child. So what do you guys think from a psychological perspective?
Ladies first.
I was thinking it probably, of course. I think even now, I was just thinking I was going to ask Jay about what he thinks about people protesting. Are people protesting in Chicago? So I was thinking that people are protesting, and then from this side of the world, we are so obedient and we do what we need to do and we will never go against like the government saying protest. I'm going out. And here it is, you hear all this about in the US where people are protesting. And I saw this interview where this guy was saying, I don't care about coronavirus. I don't care about getting it. I need to feed my kids. So that goes back to your question. And I was thinking that's true because people, whenever it comes to the idea of survival, if I have to go and there's a war out there, but I have to go and work because I need to put food on the table, people don't think about, no, I got to stay home and protect myself. They go and work because they need to. And that's probably why all these people are protesting. I mean, it's mind-boggling on this side of the world to think, like I had some of my clients thinking, what the hell is going on in your country? How can people be protesting? The country's trying to protect you. And I said to them, A, because I'm not sure that they really think this is a protection. But then on the other hand is that they're worried about that crime will increase. Unemployment, they've already 50,000 million have already filed for unemployment. So they are worried that once they are able to go back and they don't have a job, that they're going to have to do whatever it takes. Because unemployment, also unemployment, the rules, you got to show that you have, can you imagine in the US, you have to show that you are applying for other job in order for them to give you unemployment. So where are you going to apply when everyone else is unemployed? So even that is restricted. If it was me and understanding human behavior, yes, it will be increased. You always see crime increasing when there's a protest, when there's a war, when there's a crisis, when there is a 2008, when we had the stock market recession.
The recession. So,
yes, of course. And I think we're in a recession now. Of course, people will feel like, I don't care about Corona. I want to feed my children.
Agreed. And as I was alluding to earlier, I think that when people are afraid and there's so much information and misinformation, there's so many conspiracy theories, you don't know who to believe, who to trust. And remember, we started this off talking about trust being a big factor, and we're looking for strong leadership. Now, we've seen leaders that have stepped to the fore at our local levels, at our various local levels. And I think those folks have been able to present actual information. It's been able to be checked and people can trust that. But even those individuals, there is a section of the population that doesn't believe it. And so to answer your question, I definitely believe, and unfortunately this will be the case, when people are suffering, hurt people hurt people. That is the reality. We know that to be the case. And so I do expect to see some additional uptick in crime as a result of this, because people are struggling and you can't take anything away from that. And folks don't know what to make of this virus, whether or not it's real or a hoax. And I'm not sure what the temperature or the climate is there in Kuwait, but here in the States, it's been very contentious. It's been very contentious, and there's been a lot of divisiveness across party lines, across social economic lines and other.
Yeah, I mean, there were like protesters that were like angry. It's making us hate each other. It's making people, and especially like stereotyping against the Asians, for example, or fighting against, you know, I need to go back to work because there's a panic right now. Even with the assistance that the government is giving in the US, it's not going to be enough to be able to survive. People are going to lose their homes. And of course, I asked earlier, is there a lot of protest in Illinois? I mean, I see protests in all of the states. What do you think about these people protesting? Do you think they have the right to make a decision?
Again, that's a good question. I believe that people have a right to protest. I think there's a way to protest, and that not everyone, that we may be protesting or using an opportunity to protest, but it may not be protesting the thing that we're presenting as what we're protesting. So we have undoubtedly, there's a lot of suffering, a lot of pain, and people are afraid. People are concerned about their jobs. People want to reopen up the economy. People want to go back to work. I get that. Having said that, I also think that, at least here in the States, that people aren't really protesting that as much as they're protesting someone forcing them to do something that encroaches or infringes upon their comforts, the things that they do. And then they're couching that under certain civil liberties. And I don't necessarily see those things the same. So we started off this conversation by saying that we would not get political. So I'm going to ensure that.
I love your politically driven answer, though. I have to give you credit for that. I've just been sitting here thinking, wow, that's the best answer out I've ever seen. It's such a perfect answer. That was awesome. I got to give you credit for that. That was amazing. That was amazing.
Hey, they've been trying to get me to go in politics for some time, and I keep refusing. It's not going to happen.
I'll blame you. I'll blame you one bit.
No, no, Jay, we love you now. Don't go into politics. It's dirty.
But you brought up a really good point, and I practice CrossFit. That's the modality of exercise that I do right now. And, you know, it's the same thing with baseball. I was a baseball player my entire life, grew up as a catcher, played a little bit of college ball. I was a baseball coach for 15 years. You know, and that's why I'm so interested in the youth also. But one thing that I've always known is in sports in general and in working out is you have to get out of your comfort zone to see change.
Yep.
And I think everyone right now is uncomfortable because they were so comfortable in life. So for them, that's like you said, it's disruptive and it's like uncomfortable being at home for 3 or 4 weeks. But the reality of it is being at home, in my opinion, right now is probably the best place to be to, you know, stop the spread of this virus, whether it's a hoax or it's not or whatever anyone wants to say. It's going around. There's something happening. Mm-hmm. The way to stop it is by social distancing, staying at home for 3 or 4 weeks. I mean, hell, look at Taiwan. They've had zero cases for 17 days. You know, I saw that on the news yesterday. It's like, if we all practice the same practice for 3, 4 weeks, we're not going to have this issue. And Dr. D, I'm sure you see the numbers in Kuwait right now. They're just blowing up because...
Yeah, but we've been curfewed and we've been social isolated and we've been quarantined.
But with,
so why is our numbers going up in Taiwan? Has zero.
The Kuwaitis here, and this is our culture. If you're familiar with the Kuwaiti culture, we're very family orientated, especially during the month of Ramadan. And right now, my belief is people are still going out. They're getting these permits that you can apply for online by saying you're going to the doctors, which I rushed my wife to the doctor last week because, you know, she broke her arm a few months ago. And they're getting these permits and they're going to visit family members and then giving the virus on to the entire family. So, I mean, it's just what you said just rang a bell. It was like, yeah, you know, people always want to be comfortable. And you two are psychologists. Why can't we be comfortable being uncomfortable sometimes?
Wow. What a interesting philosophical question. Why can't we be comfortable?
I'm Dr. D's student, by the way.
Yeah, clearly. She did a good job. She did a good job.
Jay, remember Tavistock? Remember Tavistock? And we said that it's leave into the uncomfortable.
It requires something from that individual, though, to be willing to go down that path and to be disciplined enough to stay down that path, to continue to challenge yourself, to continue to be interested in broadening and expanding your horizons. The reality is that not everybody, in fact, not most people, are interested in doing that. Some people would prefer to just not have because the fear of the unknown or the fear of the discomfort carries more weight than what's on the other side of that. And I think that's a significant challenge. But again, that's the other thing that separates Dr. D and yourself from the masses.
I have one last question. I don't know if Mahdi have any more, but one last question. Everyone asks psychologists what we think, so I thought I should ask you. What do you think is going to happen when this is all finished? Do you really think people are going to go back to normal, or do you feel like there are going to be some changes that people are going to make?
You can't experience what we're going through right now and not come out on the other side different, right? Mm-hmm. In different in just what your cosmological perspective might be, like how you view yourself, how you view others, and how you view the world. Like that is evolving, that is changing as a result of this experience for people. And so because you have individuals that have changed within themselves, what this will look like, what the new normal will be, has to be different from this. So that's point number one. Point number two is that most people have not experienced the kind of adversity and the kind of challenges, and I shouldn't say most, some people have not ever experienced this kind of challenge. or a challenge at all. Some people haven't. And so this is going to help change perspectives a bit on what a lot of people, particularly people of color, have experienced and have lived through. We're seeing here that the rates of depression and the rates of suicide have spiked exponentially. And that's coming from individuals that are having just a hard time managing around this, managing this kind of adversity. And one of the protective factors, and sometimes we don't always think about it, when we go through struggles, when we go through challenges, it would seem at the time to be something that you wouldn't wish on your worst enemy. But the reality is that going through something actually prepares you for the next time that you need to go through something, because there's always going to be challenges. And it's not whether or not you experience challenges, but at how you manage those and how do you come out on the other side of this a better person as opposed to the person that you were when you first went in.
Yeah, that's a, I hope. And I pray. You know, I always feel like we're creatures of habit. So it will change us a little bit. And then later on, the internet sucks us in, the media does, the propaganda does, and then we're back to normal where we're fighting life. And
I agree with you. We are, in fact, creatures of habit. But if we make the choice to go down a path to change those habits, to build new neural pathways, but we got to be disciplined in that. We got to make certain sacrifices and we got to be consistent in that. Then I think those habits change into other habits, but it don't happen through osmosis. Like you got to work, you know,
yeah, put some effort. That's true.
That's for sure. Some significant effort. As my friend was suggesting, is it going to force you to get outside of those comfort zones and to be more comfortable with the uncomfortable?
Mm, very true. Leap into the uncomfortable.
Let's hope society does that.
Yeah, that could be a good book. Maybe we can work on a book together, Leap into the Uncomfortable. How about it, guys?
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. If you guys become famous, you have to recognize it happened all on the podcast.
Project true. Kuwait, that's where it's at.
It's true. Jay, we thank you so much. We took
it
a lot of
your
time.
It has been my pleasure. It has been my pleasure. You guys have been a delight. Have me back anytime. But again, I would prefer to get past this virus thing and then we can come and do something locally.
Oh, yes, definitely. 100%. I mean, just so you're aware, like that's one of the goals of the project in the next 5 years is to try and bring all these great minds that we connect with globally to bring them into Kuwait for a big wellness conference at some point. That's really like our long-term goal, but that's a ways away. But you're definitely there. And we'd definitely love to have you back on.
Count me in. Excellent. Well, guys, this has been such a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. You can also find us on Instagram at the Project Kuwait. Thank you, and join us next time.